This week on the Boag World Show, we discuss the dangers of persuasion and how it can undermine your brand. This week's show is sponsored by Balsamic and Full Story. Hello and welcome to the Boag World Show, the podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul Boag, and joining me on this week's show is Marcus Lillington. Hello, Marcus Lillington.
Hello, Paul. Are you now a robot?
Apparently so. I am indeed a robot.
Is buying expensive iPhones. Does that turn you into a robot?
No, it turns you into a mindless zombie that does exactly what he's told by Apple.
Yeah.
What a joy.
Lots of questions coming in on the room. I expect they're all very, very sensible.
No, they're asking about why the video's broken, which apparently it's not. It's not for me.
Who cares?
And which iPhone did I buy? No, I bought the extra big one, the Max. I went to the Max.
So you can only just sort of see that, you know, the tip of your thumb and your finger either side of it.
I've always liked the bigger phone, you see. Yeah. So I was a bit disappointed.
Hello!
Yeah, because people still hold their phones to their head to make a call. Or I don't, anyway. So I went with that because I wanted to get rid of my... I've got an iPad, I've got an iPhone. I don't want both. I just want one thing that's somewhere in the middle. I miss the... You know what I miss? I miss the iPad Mini. I liked the iPad Mini.
Still got mine. I don't know whether it works. It probably does work, but it's probably very slow.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. Even just the normal iPad is a bit heavy for kind of reading stuff.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, but the Mini is brilliant. Yeah. So basically, you want a phone the size of the iPad Mini.
No, because that would be silly.
Hello! Like that. You can walk around with it to your ear.
But, someone's posted a question using the question feature in the chat room.
Ooh, what's that? Is that only going
to you? Do you talk to your phone like a slice of toast? I don't get that. Lewis has got a bit of a strange sense of humour. Mm. I don't really get him. There's apparently a meme associated with it or something. I don't understand it.
Have you got it yet?
No, I don't get it.
When does
Friday.
It come out? I don't know.
Friday.
So next week we can talk about this some more and get you to show it to us.
Yes, which will work really well for an audio podcast. Don't forget, we do an audio podcast. This video stuff, I mean, just look at my face at the moment. I'm not made for video. So this is an audio first.
Have you got a poorly cold, Paul? I had one.
No, I haven't. I just randomly decided to sprout spots underneath my nose.
Like a teenager.
And look kind of all, you know, baggy-eyed and stuff. So there we go. Okay. So should we talk about something useful?
Go on then.
I just want to remind people what this season is about, because not everybody has been listening to every episode. This season we're looking at encouraging clicks, how to encourage people to take action on your website without alienating them, without alienating users, and that's the key thing. I'm going to turn it into a book, I've decided. I've been talking with the guys at Smashing, because I always publish with them, about turning it into a book. And at the moment, we're having an argument about what the title of the book should be. I want to call it Encouraging Clicks, which I think is a perfectly legitimate and nice title for a book.
Whereas brainwashing your users would work much better.
Well, Vitaly wants to call it Click! Exclamation mark. I know. It's a trend in book, right? You know, you've got to go for some really obscure, stupid ass title. I said I will call it Click if I can have the strap line getting people to click without being a dick.
Oh, I hope you're serious.
I would seriously publish a book with that title.
That's fantastic.
It'd be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Because that's
exactly what
it's all about.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate and descriptive title.
It's descriptive, but also it's engaging. Yeah, see, look, everybody in the chat room would buy that book.
There you go.
So there we go. That's what I'm trying to do. Anyway, all of that was just to say, but that's what we're talking about in this season.
Mm. Cool.
Getting people to click without being a dick. And actually,
there is a lovely ring to that.
The dick part of it is very relevant in this particular week, because what we're going to be talking about in this particular episode of the show is the dangers of persuasion, how you end up kind of going into the dickish territories. And so we're going to discuss that a little bit later on in the show. Joe in the chat room has come up. He has rightly identified that talking in terms of clicking is very limiting, that a lot of people use mobile devices today. So
touchscreen is a thing.
It is a thing. So alongside getting people to click without being a dick, we also have or tap without being a but actually, I have to say, that's very rude. Dick is more acceptable in my...
Do you think so?
I think
so. In your male-orientated, patriarchal world, Paul?
Yes, you probably got a really good point. So what you're saying is that to ensure gender equality,
there
we should...
I hope you've tweeted that, Lewis. Dick is more acceptable, said Paul Boag.
All right, I take that bit back. All right, I'm perfectly happy to allow as well as dicks.
There we go. Good. Glad to hear it, Paul.
We're going to have to put an explicit tag on this show now. I don't know if I know how to do that.
Don't ask me. I just edit them.
The little kiddies will suffer. I imagine we get a lot of children listening to this show, and their little ears will be forever corrupted.
Oh.
See, Lewis is nice. He won't tweet that. He likes me. And he also agrees on the T word. There you go. See? I'm a wise man.
Creep. Yes, quite right, Paul.
We need to stop talking to people in the chat room.
Yes, we do.
They're a bad influence. Marcus.
Yes.
You haven't said what your thought for the day is.
I'm going off piste. We're going to come back to the Headscape website. You've just got moustache envy, haven't you, Paul?
I just need to colour in the spots or join them up. Sorry, I'm feeling very self-conscious today on this audio podcast.
Well, I'm not surprised. Looking like that.
Go on then.
I wouldn't even have noticed if you hadn't said anything. There you go.
Yeah.
So, yes, we're having a little break from the Headscape site redesign. This week's thought is called... Hang in there. So, as you've already no doubt deduced from the things I've been saying over the past few weeks, that this year hasn't been all that brilliant on the winning new work front.
Tell me about it.
Start of the year was okay.
Yeah.
But this summer, apart from one client who we thank majorly, has been awful, frankly. And I'm hearing the same story from everywhere, including yourself, Paul. You were complaining of somebody cancelling something on you just last week, I believe.
Yep.
This got me thinking about a blog post that I started writing back in 2014 when we went through a similar period. So what's that, 4 years ago now? And it's entitled, it's changed titles, but its current title is Work Drying Up? And it's full of sage logic, in my opinion, about how even though more work is going in-house and there are more experts in the field, more agencies, all that kind of thing, that there are many, many people in organisations around the world that need our help.
Yes.
And I stand by that. However, I refuse to publish my article, firstly because I worry that I am completely and utterly wrong. And
That's never stopped me publishing anything.
Well, yeah, I know. But in my case, I am slightly worried on that one. But also because I think it would be, wait for it, bad luck.
Oh, no.
And I'm even concerned about talking about it on this show, but I've started.
So I
can't carry on. All of this is obviously superstition, and I'm the kind of person who publicly pulls up other people on their ridiculous superstitions. I delight in opening umbrellas indoors, putting shoes on tables, walking under ladders, throwing salt over the wrong shoulder and not saluting magpies. As far as I'm concerned, it's...
What? Hang on a minute. I was with you till that last one. You're supposed to salute magpies.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? I didn't
know that.
It's
a thing, yes. Like all the others, it's all utter twaddle. But this feels different. This article has become a thing that I can never publish. So anyway, why am I talking about it now? I guess it's so I can talk about it without having to publish the unpublishable article. But basically, bottom line, so this says, so the title maybe gives you a clue. Hang in there. Last week was a very good week for Headscape. Two new clients slash projects came in after lots and lots of work and waiting and all that kind of thing. And there's another one we're waiting on as well, which, fingers crossed. One of these has been in the offing for months and months. And what I realised as I was thinking about this thought for the day is that they could have both easily been lost. We've lost some crackers over the summer as well. And these ones could have been similar. One, we found out we tipped it on the pitch. We were behind and we managed to kind of flip it over on the pitch. And who knows, you could have had a day where you don't really get on with somebody and that would have been, so we would have been out the door. And the other people, I've got a habit of kind of incessantly asking people. If I send them an email, I'll say, you know, look, if this isn't right for you, make sure we keep the conversation
going. Yeah.
Most people don't. Most people ignore that and they make their decision without talking to you. But these people did keep coming back and saying, we really like all of this stuff, but this thing doesn't sit with us at all. And
excellent.
I go, well, that's no problem. We can fix that. And we ended up winning it. So hooray. So I think what it really boils down to is that though we are good at what we do, so are most of the competition.
Mm.
So it seems to be the little things that are the difference between winning jobs and not.
Mm.
So my thought for the day is remind yourself that just because you're not winning work, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing anything wrong.
Mm.
You might be, so analyse your processes and see if there's anything glaring, but don't fret that you're suddenly way worse than you were 6 months ago when all you were doing was complaining about having too much work, because you're probably in... You know, you're the same level of skill, I suppose, is what I'm going to say. I've been doing this for a very long time now, and it's become very clear that these things go in cycles. Mm. We obviously try to allow for this, but sometimes that's just how it is, and we need to be patient, and we need to use our downtime wisely, which brings me nicely back to next week's thought for the day, which will be about redesigning the Headscape site, which we used our downtime wisely to do. That's it.
I'll tell you the other thing that I really think is a big factor with these times is that it's about your state of mind, isn't it? Which goes back to the hanging in there.
Oh, I was bad when it... Around end of July, not good, even for me.
Yeah. And the problem that you have in those kinds of situations is that when you do win a piece of work, right, you go, oh, won it, phew, thanks. You know, That's I could put that one in the bank. Now let's move on. Let's find the next piece. Mm. And so you're focusing on the failures the whole time rather than the positives. Mm. So, you know, you can you kind of are self-perpetuating and you almost end up with a failure mentality or a victim mentality. And I'm not talking about that bollocks thing you get from American business gurus that say, you know, think yourself to victory or any of that crap. But it is true that state of mind is a big factor in it.
Mm.
And that's even more emphasized actually in my kind of case, where it's, you know, you're selling yourself. So when someone says no to you, that is a personal. That's me that they're rejecting as a human being, you know?
It's horrible.
So it's a tricky old business. But you're right. It goes in waves. And a lot of the time, your reasons for losing work are so, so varied and so all over the place, aren't they? Mm. And it can be something absolutely trivial, like, you know, they didn't like the shirt that you were wearing. Has been a factor in decision making, I know, in the past, all the way through to, the fact that the CEO's nephew was, you know, involved with the other team.
It's usually the case. Somebody is favoured in some way that you don't know anything about. There's nothing you can do about it. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
Stick with it. That's my thought. I won't repeat myself.
No. It's a good thought. Okay, let's talk about Balsamiq, which is our first sponsor for the day. They are very keen to help you improve your products and services. And the best thing is, it's not going to cost you a penny. You don't need to sign up for Balsamiq. You don't need to pay the money, although I highly recommend that you do that because they're lovely. If you're running a not-for-profit or a small agency, you've got a startup idea for something that's going to be beneficial to the world at large, they want to help you. They want to help you by guiding you through that wireframing process to get you off the ground. Think of them as a kind of a bit like a tech incubator without the money. So they'll take you through a bit of wireframing and help you get your idea into a bit of shape. And to do that, you can just drop them an email at userresearch@balsamic.com, and they will gladly get involved. Obviously, they've got limited abilities. They're not this huge company with hundreds of people sitting waiting to receive your email, so they won't necessarily be able to do all of them. But if you've got a worthy cause, it's definitely worth checking it out. Also, if you're looking for a bit of constructive feedback on your website, especially around user experience and that kind of stuff, I'm creating a series of videos for them. So we're looking for websites that we can review. I can then go through your website. So let's say you send me the URL of your website. I'll then review that website, create a little video out of it that they then will share, obviously, with you, but they'll also share it online for other people to see it as well. So it's a great way of getting, you know, a little review on your site. If you fancy signing up for that one, you can do so by going to balsamic.com/learn/BOAG review. Talking of /learn on their website, that's worth checking out as well. They've got loads of great blog posts and content out there. Okay. Ooh.
What we're talking about, Paul?
Oh, what's all this going on in the chat room? Is everybody going on about swearing?
Yes, I'll get my beep out to cover up words that we've said.
Oh,
we
good. Shouldn't. Oh, good. I'm glad you're doing that.
It does sound funny.
It does. No, it's a good thing to do because I do like to keep it reasonably clear. I know I'm a bit crap sometimes. Well, that's a difficult one. The other problem I have is that I get Americans complain to me quite a lot about some of the words that we use in the podcast. But to us, those aren't swear words, right? Well, okay. They'll use some words. Yeah, so for example, using the word like shit or crap is very, very mild over here. Mm-hmm. But a lot more in America. It's a lot bigger deal in America. While, and please don't beat those out, otherwise that whole sentence is going to be meaningless. Well,
Paul saying, can we beep out really? But it wasn't really. What was the different word?
It was a different word. I can't remember now. Right. That was it. Yeah. Right. While a word like, because of course they talk about fanny packs all the time, which has got a totally different meaning over here. So it's really interesting. It's quite a tricky one to get right.
Right.
See what I did there. Right, okay. Oh, I did right! Drop it. We're going to talk about the danger of persuasion, right? Oh, God, this is just painful. I've done it again. At the start of the show, I said that we were going to look at why some of those more manipulative techniques don't work and why you should avoid them. Now, obviously, these kind of manipulative techniques that are increasingly used on websites are known as dark patterns. And I wrote a great article, he says humbly, on dark patterns that I will put in the show notes and you can check out. If you don't know what a dark pattern is essentially any manipulative technique that effectively tricks people into doing what they don't really want to do. So a great example of it would be those check boxes that you always used to find on forms where it said, you know, if you do not wish to receive our email newsletter, please check the uncheck check box. And you're like, you know, and you're not sure whether you're supposed to check it or not. And they kind of trick you into signing up. Another one would be companies that add insurance to your shopping basket without asking, or other products or services. There's a whole plethora of these little things. And they're increasingly common. And of course, one person's perception of what a dark pattern is can be very different to another person's problem. that perception of it, right?
Yeah.
So I might find something unacceptable that, Marcus, you're quite happy with. So it's really important to realize here that it's not about what you think is all right running the company. It's what your users think is all right and what they find acceptable.
Mm.
But the problem is, so you instantly think, well, okay, we should just avoid these things, right?
Yeah.
But the problem with these kinds of things is that they actually work. Right.
Well, that's, I guess, why the likes of the holiday sites that we keep picking on do what they do. And they don't. That doesn't bother me anymore because I ignore it. I just don't, I don't get bothered by the fact that there's only two spaces left because I don't believe them. And they go back and they're always, you know. Although saying that, some of them they do say sold out on. And I think that's just to kind of try and make it seem more real, isn't it? I've never had a problem where I've dilly-dallied for a day and gone back and found, oh, my thing that I wanted isn't there.
Yeah.
So I just don't believe it.
But you've got to ask yourself is, even if they weren't lying, right? So let's give you another. Let's not pick on holiday sites because we've done too many of them. Let's do Etsy, right? Pick on Etsy. So Etsy sell handcrafted one-off items, right? Mm. And so if you go to their website, you're looking at a one-off piece of furniture, those I bought recently, and it said on the screen, you know, three other people have added this to their basket, right? The implication being that three other people are about to buy this one-off item.
Yeah.
Now, you could argue that either way. You could argue that it's a dark pattern that's designed to manipulate me into buying quickly. But you could argue, well, it's a legitimate service to tell you that you could miss out on this one-off item,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's what I mean about it. It all depends on interpretation, and that means that we need to understand how our users see it.
But doesn't that actually mean that three other people have put it in their basket at some point?
Yeah.
Not right now.
You don't know. You know, yeah. And this is the problem with it.
Yeah.
And your reaction really is the problem with dark patterns. Where it becomes dangerous is whether or not the intention behind that was good, right?
Hmm.
It's the fact that you see it and you go, ah, oh, they're just trying to manipulate me. This is bollocks. Okay? And that is where the problem lies, okay? Yes, they do work. They absolutely do work. You can measure an increase in conversion that comes out of using these manipulative techniques. But what you're not seeing is the cost that goes alongside that. Because the cost comes in forms that are harder to measure, right? So the bad taste that it leaves in your mouth, right? Will not have a short-term impact on their bottom line, but it will have a longer-term impact, right? And that's where you start to have problems, because you, for a start, we're going to see a slow and consistent decline in the effectiveness of these dark patterns, because, as you've already demonstrated perfectly for me, consumers are increasingly cynical, they're increasingly savvy. Okay?
Mm.
So the result of that is that it's going to be less effective, but also it means that they are very likely just to walk away because they've got so much choice and there are so many sites out there that can provide what they want that they see something like this and go, oh, well, stuff them then. I'll go and buy it elsewhere. So you will begin to see a decline in it, but there's a more fundamental problem that's going on, which is that there is a fundamental shift in power. Because let's be clear, dark patterns have been around for donkey's years, right?
Mm.
You know, well before the web, okay? You know, these kinds of techniques to manipulate you into buying, that's
permanent sales and things like that, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of Mad Men territory, isn't it? And advertising, you know, it's been around for years. The difference is The reason that these techniques are becoming increasingly dangerous is because of the impact the web has had. Impact number one is there's more choice than ever before, so people can flip over to somebody else. But impact number two is the fundamental shift there has been in the power between the customer and the company, right? One disgruntled customer can undermine an entire brand, okay?
Yep.
And this is absolutely crucial to realize. So for example, I must have told the story of Hassan Saeed, who took out a promoted tweet about British Airways,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That caused them a major PR disaster. Another older example is Jeff Jarvis, who wrote a blog post entitled My Dell Hell, where he talked about bad customer service with Dell that was reportedly knocked a third off of Dell's share price, right? So the point is that one pissed off client can make an enormous difference, can have a huge impact. So the result of that is that we need to be much more careful because companies don't make the correlation between bad, annoyed customers and dark patterns. There's not a direct link that you can track through in the same way as you can track, oh, we added a pop-up overlay, that caused a 20% increase in conversion, therefore pop-up overlays must be good. There is more to it. You need to think more strategically about the long-term impact that your decisions are having. But there is one other factor as well that we need to factor in here, which is buyer's remorse, okay? If you're manipulated into signing up for a newsletter, purchasing a product, doing anything that you're not happy with, it generates a reaction, right? Where you go away dissatisfied, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, that is massively expensive to businesses, and businesses constantly underestimate the cost of buyer's remorse, right? It means that they're going to complain about you, which increases your marketing costs. They're more likely to return, and the cost of returning an item is huge. They're more likely to call customer support, and the cost of dealing with customer complaints and queries is big as well. Mm. They're less likely to purchase again. All of these factors cost your business money. But the problem that you encounter within organizations is they've got this siloed thinking. So I'm sitting in the UX department where I'm under pressure to increase the conversion rate. So I put in, this manipulative technique. Now, what I never hear about is the spike that then happens in customer complaints, right? Because I'm not that department. So I'm not thinking about that department.
That's right. So, it's like if another department is being driven by selling extras, then they're only going to be measured by how many extras they sell.
Yeah.
And if that puts people off ever buying something again, that's not encountered. It's that you're basically, I'm agreeing with you entirely.
Yeah.
We've said this before. You need to have somebody who has power and B is able to view holistically the user experience or the customer journey, just to kind of see if there are any areas like this that are going to cause problems.
Yeah, but there is a flip side to this, I think, because obviously I'm preaching to the choir saying all of this, but the flip side of it is that we as people that care about the user experience need to recognize that dark patterns do work, right? And that we need to be better in our argument than they're really bad, right? I've read so many articles about dark patterns saying we shouldn't use them, they're unethical. But what is unethical is in the eye of the beholder, right? And okay, you might consider it unethical, but other people don't. Some people don't care. not because they're bad people, but because they're under enormous pressure to reach these targets and you know, achieve these goals that management have placed upon them. So we need to stop talking about people who use dark patterns as evil or unethical, and instead provide them with a solid, tangible business case in order to take a different approach. And that means we need to break out of our silos, we need to understand what's going on in other teams, etc., etc. There we go.
Yeah, I've just got one thing that keeps buzzing around my head is booking.com. I know we said we wouldn't talk about travel sites, but I would have thought that a site as big as them would have noticed by now if what might be considered as dark patterns they use is affecting their business long term. So the little question in the back of my head is saying, well, they're still doing it, so
yeah,
is it really bad actually?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, right? For a start, you made a huge assumption that I am learning more and more is just totally inaccurate, which is this assumption that, oh, because they're big, they must know what they're doing, right?
Absolutely, yes. I just thought they would have the resources to test this. They may not be.
Yes. But They test a lot. I don't want to get into talking about booking.com. I've got a bit of insights into how they operate internally, and it's a bit kind of unfair to
pick on them particularly.
Pick on them, yeah. And to, you know, show the world their dirty laundry. But like any company, they're not perfect. You know, they don't have any more joined up integration between business units as anybody else. You know, and yes, they're very, very good at testing stuff, but it all depends what you're testing, doesn't it? Are they testing the right thing, etc.?
Fair enough.
And this is a problem. This is a problem that absolutely everybody faces. You know, I see it in all kinds of organizations, from huge multinational, you know, e-commerce brands, all the way through to tech startups and everything in between. Okay. Go on, you can
say. I know, I was going to say, in their defense, I still use their site.
So do I.
I just ignore all the silly messaging.
And I think the reason, you see, what part of the reason that they are a little bit protected from dark patterns, right, and the negative side of dark patterns, is because their usability is superb.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you forgive them the rest. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I say that I'm used to it, but actually maybe it's just I'll allow them it because...
You'll allow them it because who do you go to? What's your alternative?
I get great results. So
yeah.
It's very easy to use.
Exactly. Right, let's talk about our second sponsor, which is Full Story. I want to talk about session recorders, because obviously that's what Full Story provide. And I always get the same reaction. If you've not come across session recorders before, what essentially they do is they allow you to watch back real users navigating around your website, okay, seeing what they're doing, see what their actions they're taking. And the great thing from a user experience point of view is those people are behaving utterly naturally because it's their task and they don't know they're being observed. Right? That's the point you react, isn't it? Oh, I don't like the fact that I'm going around websites and people are watching me. Maybe, and it's a judgment that you need to make over that. And so session recorders sound intrinsically creepy. But I did just want to touch on that a little bit and about some things. I mean, the first thing to say is obviously all of those sessions are anonymous. You don't know who those people are. You know, you don't know what they're, you know, you have got no name or personal information in any way associated with it. Also, Full Story bent over backwards in this regards, which is I absolutely love it. So they will exclude sensitive customer data, right? So that you can't see what anything that are entering in those kinds of fields, etc. And all you really know about somebody is really what browser they're using, maybe their rough location, that kind of stuff. You can also block any IP ranges that you want to. So if there are some users coming from certain sources that you don't want to, you know, see, then fine, you can block those out. You can block out any fields that you choose. If you want to keep it anonymous, there's a lot that you can do to kind of mitigate those kinds of issues. And obviously, you probably are thinking about GDPRS. GDPRS, what the hell's that?
Did I mean that? You're mixing two things together. You're mixing GDPR and PRS.
Yes, I am. GDPR, sorry. They've got this, you know, they've obviously spent a lot of time, and if you Google full story and GDPR, you can find out about how they're addressing it. So it's really good to see how you can kind of minimize the creep factor of tools like this while still getting the benefit, because it is so better. I don't give a monkey's ass who somebody is, but I care about how they're trying to complete a task. Mm. You know, and being able to see that stuff is so invaluable. So don't let the creep factor put you off from just looking at this in a little bit more depth, because there's some really interesting stuff there. You can try them out for free for a month at their pro account. No need to enter a credit card. Talking about dark patterns that pee me off majorly. Oh, sign up for our free trial. Enter our credit card and we'll start charging you at the end. You just know.
Yes. So you have to put yourself in a reminder in your calendar.
Yeah, to cancel it.
Cancel it day before.
But what happens? I had this happen to me recently, right? What happened? It charged me automatically. So what did I do? Contacted customer services, who had to refund my money, right? They have to. Okay, so all that did, that dark pattern, all it achieved was basically forcing somebody to do extra work within the company.
Yeah, and piss you off.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, they're not doing that. Full story, you're not doing that. You can sign up without any credit cards. If you get to the end of the trial period of the pro account and you still love it, but not enough because you can't afford it for whatever reason, you can get 1,000 sessions per month anyway, which is great for small little people like me that just want to kind of try it out on some key pages. To sign up and to try it out, go to fullstory.com/BOAG. Okay.
Cool.
Here we go. That's that. So the second part, so we've talked about how we don't want to alienate people and we should avoid dark patterns, but we also do want to position ourselves in a positive light. And where's the line there, right? Where do you go from sounding manipulative to, you know, to doing it right? So, for example, we've all seen... I'll come back to that in a minute. So we have to walk this line between being positive but not manipulating people, right? So we don't want to necessarily kind of influence people's thought process in a manipulative way, but let's be honest, you can't not influence somebody's perception. Right?
Yeah.
So you're every decision and everything you do essentially does to some degree influence somebody's perception. And as Paul has pointed out in the chat room, that's our job, right? Our job is positioning stuff in a positive light. Okay?
Yeah. You can say, well, but be truthful. That would be a good place to start. You could say, don't leave any truths out. That could be a place where you draw the line. And I think that is actually quite a good rule, because if you start leaving stuff out, then you are manipulating people.
Yeah.
You could argue that you're not. But
it's even little things, right? Just to give you an example of how you can't avoid influencing someone's behavior, right?
Okay.
Consider Well, let's use hotels. We've been talking about hotels. Why the hell not, right? So you've done a search on hotels in Paris, right?
Yep.
And you return a list of hotels, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You being the person that's designed the website. So the web, you've designed the website. You've returned a list of hotels. What order do you display those hotels in, right?
The ones who paid you the most money.
Would you order them alphabetically? Let's set aside the pay the most money thing, right? Let's presume everybody's paid you the same amount. Would you order them alphabetically? Would you order them from least to most expensive? Would you order them from most to least costly? Or would you order them randomly?
That's a really tough one, isn't it? Blah. I think
because whatever human
beings really like alphabetical lists. But mm-hmm. lists of hotels, we're so used to them being seemingly random, we accept it. But generally, my general rule is a list should be alphabetical.
But that's actually not very helpful from a user experience point of view, because
in this case, who cares? Yeah, it's called the Alpha Hotel or the Beta Hotel, doesn't matter.
No.
It's if you're searching on a list where you do know what you're searching for, then it matters.
While we do care about price.
Yes.
Right?
But cheapest to most expensive, I don't know. It depends what I'm after.
The interesting thing is, if you list the most expensive first, it will increase your conversion rate. And the reason being is because it makes all of the subsequent ones look cheap.
Okay.
By comparison. So my question is that manipulation? Or is it just basically showing your product and service in a positive light?
Yeah, I mean, as long as you've provided tools to change it into whichever way you want it, then that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you could argue that it is manipulation of a kind, but you need to pick something, don't
yes.
you?
That's my point.
Yeah.
That's the kind of point I'm driving at. We do need to pick something, and in my view, it's okay to pick the most positive thing. You see, what you're doing is you're anchoring people with the high price, right? You're saying, effectively, this is the highest, you know, this is a price. Oh, right, so everything looks cheaper in comparison to that anchor. So another great example of the same principle are charity websites, right? When you go to a charity website to make a donation, normally they will suggest some amounts.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
Now, the reason that they do that is because people don't know how much to give when they go to a website. So what they do then in a situation like that, if you didn't have those anchor points, people create their own anchor. Right. So they go, well, what did I give last time I gave to charity? And am I feeling better or worse off than I was last time I gave? Right. So we create anchors whether or not, somebody does it for us. So the question then, well, is it manipulative to suggest these figures? Or actually, is it a useful guide to give somebody a helpful anchor, like if you give £10, you can buy an entire family mosquito nets, for example.
It's both, Paul.
Yeah, and in my mind, what I'm getting at is that that's okay, right? So, although I've been very negative about dark patterns, I don't feel that this falls into those categories. I think this is more framing yourself in a positive light. Let me give you one last example just to kind of wrap up on this particular subject, right? Which is, we do this all the time in the way we word things. So take, for example, how companies sell antibacterial surface cleaner, right? They always make claims like, kills 98% of germs. Great. Wonderful. Sounds great, doesn't it? But if we reword that as, it fails to kill 2% of germs, it suddenly sounds a lot less compelling,
yeah.
Right? Both statements are correct, but one will obviously convert a lot higher than another. And that's okay, in my mind, at least. It's interesting,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's when it comes to, yeah, what I was saying earlier about not leaving truths out. Maybe
yeah.
you should be saying both. I know how you would say that. I don't know. I don't actually believe that in that particular case. It's fine to say kills 98% of germs. People can work it out, can't they?
Yeah, exactly.
I suspect that there are occasions when using that kind of language would bother me. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. That just gets because of what I said earlier about making sure you include all the truths. You don't leave any truths out.
And that... You said something there that I think is the key to it, that there are occasions where it would bother me, right? And so the moral of the story here is you need to do your user research.
Yes.
You need to understand what people, are thinking, what they consider unacceptable to them.
Yep.
And I could give you a real example of this, Marcus. When we did when we worked on Wiltshire Farm Foods, do you remember at the very beginning of Wiltshire Farm Foods, when we first started working on them, they didn't have universal pricing. In other words, each franchise, they're a franchise organization, and each franchise had its own pricing. They could price however they wanted. So in order to find out the price, you had to enter your postcode. Now, that's a pain in the ass to do. And the website had plastered across it free delivery, right? Because the delivery is free, okay? But I remember us testing with one guy, I don't know whether you remember it.
I don't know.
Who entered his postcode and the price went down. Okay. Because that was the way that we were doing it. We were showing the highest price, okay? And then when they entered the postcode, we would show a lower price. He was incandescent with rage, right? Because in his mind, that drop in price showed that we were charging some people for delivery. That's how he viewed it in his mind. Right or wrong, that's how he saw it. Okay? So he associated the price. Basically, he thought we were hiding the delivery price. Okay? And that's a classic example of where you've got to be really careful about the way you communicate. It was probably an outlier. Well, it was an outlier. But
mad, I tell you.
It is mad. But it's the fact that people are but strange. They don't see things as the way that we do. And we have a cognitive bias because we work on these websites all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There you go. It's interesting. It's an interesting topic this week, where the line is. And there is no answer.
No.
Other
it changes
than
per audience, per person. Yeah.
And you need to do your homework. There you go. All right, that about wraps us up for this show. Marcus, do you have a joke for us?
I do. This is from David Phillips on the Joke Channel, on the Berg World Slack channel. I like this one. Sherlock Holmes is gardening when Dr. Watson comes over to visit. I could have said that sentence better. Anyway, Watson asks, "What are you planting?" Start again. Sherlock Holmes is gardening when Dr. Watson comes over to visit. Watson asks, "What are you planting?" Holmes replies, "A lemon tree, my dear Watson."
Oh.
That's a really hard one to pronounce. A lemon tree.
A lemon tree. There is a reoccurring theme with all your jokes. They're all plays on words.
I know.
You need to come up with something different.
I love a pun. I'm a pun person.
You're a pun person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no helping some people. Puns like... Puns... What? Oh, no, that's not a pun, is it? I was going to go back to my strap line for the book, but it's not a pun, really.
No,
it's more of a rhyme.
Yeah.
All right, well, don't wait for a book that will never happen because me and Vitaly will constantly argue about the title of it. Don't wait. Get yourself the masterclass today by going to boagworld.com/masterclass. But until then, thank you for listening. And next week we shall be back to talk about...
Something else.
Something? What are we talking about next week? risk... Managing risk and helping people, the underappreciated role of appreciation. That's a fairly difficult phrase to say. Okay. Do you think we ought to just stop doing this podcast now because neither of us can speak anymore? Let's call it a day.
Well, that's it. That's it. No more.
That's it. The end. That's it. No, just for this week. All right. Talk to you again next week, guys. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Bye.